Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, episode 129. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with myself. Maybe that's why I'm playing the blues. Phil, Tim, and Graham all could not be on. It's kind of a bizarre week because 4th of July weekend is coming up, and no question that everybody's scrambling to get projects done and get things in order before the big weekend. And so we're going to have a special guest on today. So the show is really going to be an interview with someone that you may or may not know, a woman named Meg Knodel. And she's a senior librarian in information and online services with Hennepin County Library. And she's responsible for online marketing and communications. But I think she does a lot more than that based on the sorts of things that she's involved in. She coordinates this thing called bookspace.org, which is the library's internal social network, which includes a blog, book lists, and other reader advisory tools. And she's just a delight as a person, tons of energy. She's a real extrovert, really into social media. And we'll ask her about something that just occurred with COCO MSP, the co-working facility that's in St. Paul, that is also going to be in downtown Minneapolis, opening soon. Today, this is being recorded on Wednesday the 29th, and today is the last adventure where you can go and see the facility at the Grain Exchange, the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, before it opens. And so we'll talk to her about that and her new unique role as a co-working librarian. So that should be interesting. But Meg attended this past weekend the American Library Conference. And there were some new announcements there. But also, as you may or may not even be aware, there's been a lot going on in the library space. As they supposedly, by a lot of outside views, struggle for relevancy in a day when everything's moving digitally. Although I would argue, based on my experiences at various libraries, not just in Eden Prairie or downtown Minneapolis, but on my travels, I will often be in these small towns and I'll stop in libraries that Andrew Carnegie, the Steel Baron, built. He was the Bill Gates of his era, and one of his major philanthropy projects was putting libraries in small towns so that they could open up knowledge to people regardless of where they happen to reside. And so what's interesting about this shift that's going on is things are moving digitally very, very quickly, but as you'll hear, things are moving in the direction, or I guess libraries are moving in the direction of making things happen. So two things happened this week that are definitely worth paying attention to. The first is Google, the Google Plus project. Yeah, I know that Google augured into the ground with Google Wave, but the Google Plus project looks really promising. So you have your contacts and you can create circles so you can just have a small group of people together, or you can create what they call hangouts, which are webcam-driven social gatherings, if you will. So you can say, hey, 7 o'clock Thursday night, we're all going to just hang out. Here's the URL. Everybody just shows up and they've got their webcam and they can sit and chat. So it's very, very interesting, just from a meetup standpoint. Then there's something called Spark, which is a feed of interesting stuff based on topics that are really topic centric. You can share your photos and you can connect your Google profile to this. And it's just, I mean, there are so many discussions online about, you know, will it kill Facebook? No, it won't. Doesn't the interface remind you of Facebook? No, it doesn't. You know, people on both sides of it. Google also has a native Android-based app for it that looks really promising. There'll be an iOS-based app coming soon, I guess, as soon as Apple approves it. And just a really fascinating effort in the social media space. Can already see how we'll use this for Minovate. Can already see how we will use it for our company, with our customers and clients, and also potentially with prospects, but have to remain to be seen how we'll do that. But I'll put something in the link in the show notes, but plus.google.com will take you to the site where you can sign up for an invite, and you can also take a tour and learn more about each one of the features. And it's really, I think it's going to, at a minimum, it's going to be worth trying out and seeing what happens. The other thing that really got to me was about Google ratcheting up their design. Now, Andy Hertzfeldt, one of the key people on the Mac project, helped design, or I guess was given free rein to design Google Plus. And Google just did a blog post about evolving Google design and experience. And I remember when they came out with Google Sites, is I did a blog post on my own personal blog about how my grandmother could design better than this. And I actually saw when Eric Schmidt was on Apple's board, I thought, what a great synergy between the two of them. Google, this major global internet-centric platform company with engineering beyond reproach, just a phenomenal organization. And Apple, nobody does it better in terms of the humans connecting to that back-end infrastructure and that global platform that Google has built. And I thought this was the perfect marriage. But as we've seen, it's actually been more competition than co-opetition, and so Google is starting to step up their design a little bit. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see how they do that and whether or not the stuff even looks good, because they're all about performance. They're all about how fast a page loads, that people want the information. They're not necessarily needing eye candy. And yet, if you go to iGoogle, if you go to Google Sites, all the tools that they provide people are tools that would have been great if it was 1997. But it's a little past that. You know, design matters. If design didn't matter, every magazine would be white pages with Times New Roman text. No pictures, no columns, no layout, nothing. But design does matter. It makes information approachable. It, frankly, sometimes you really get fatigued trying to read on and on and on, and it's nice to have things broken up visually. So it's nice to see Google moving in that direction, because it's going to be even more and more necessary with Android phones and tablets and the direction that Google is taking things like Chrome OS laptops and so forth. So, without further ado, let's bring on Meg. I'm on with Meg Knodel. How are you, Meg?
Good. I'm glad to be back in the Twin Cities.
Now, you were down, the conference was down in New Orleans?
Correct. The American Library Association. They always pick a warm spot in the summer, so it's more frugal for librarians to attend.
Got it. And was it hot?
It was hot.
Oh, man.
Even when it rained, it didn't cool off.
Yeah, yeah.
But the highlights were I got to go to Emeril's NOLA restaurant.
Okay.
And we drove down to the Delta and saw where the Mississippi River ends.
Cool.
And I also got to go to a gospel mass, which was pretty amazing. People brought their own tambourines.
Wow. Boy, would my wife love that. She loves gospel.
It was great.
Oh, man. Well, and the only memory I have of going down the Delta is driving a brand new Ford, Mercury Sable, when they had just come out with a new model, and doing about 70 on the Delta. And all of a sudden, literally the road turns and it's like 10 miles an hour as the curve. There's no sign. And I just locked it up and I'm sliding down the grass going sideways. And I thought, okay, well, I almost died in New Orleans.
Yeah, you know, where we were in the bayou, we were afraid we were going to flood the rental car.
Oh,
because
no.
It was tidal roads. So as the water rose, you were just kind of like, Oh, I hope we make it out of here.
Oh, swell. So before we get to the conference itself, can you touch on the Coco MSP thing? Because I alluded to that just as I started off. I did a little intro. Tell us about that and what that means and what role you're going to play and so forth.
Well, we're still working on developing it exactly, what it looks like in the end may be different. But right now what's happening is I am at Coco one day a week, Wednesdays, mm-hmm. available for research, both on a project basis and just on a drop-in basis, for Coco members. I'll be in the Minneapolis space as soon as it opens up, July 12th. And we're working together. Don and I are working on some programming philosophy for the space and thinking about how to build more community and meet the community's information needs.
Got it.
Well, clear as mud, huh?
Well, it is, but, you know, Don and I have kicked around some ideas about, because I've done some of these events where I've had Skype video and had somebody coming in on Skype video projected up on a screen, mm-hmm. and then had a camera set up, a nice high-def camera pointed at the audience. So when they asked questions, you could zoom in on the audience, and also the presenter could see people's reactions. So if you're telling a joke, it's kind of nice to hear and see people chuckle.
Absolutely.
You know, so you get that feedback. Otherwise, you know, you may as well be talking to the wall. And I said to Don, it could be really great to start to bring in thought leaders and have
that's exactly have the events. The kind of thing we're talking about, but we're also talking about member to member sharing and also member to community. So if a Coco member has an idea about how they'd like to share a unique expertise or begin some kind of a program, they can come to me and I can help them put that together.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, it's, we you know, there's so many things we could talk about the information space and about reference material and about library services and all that kind of stuff. But from a 50,000 foot perspective, mm-hmm. what were the headlines from the conference? I mean, what were the big hot buttons that people were kind of buzzing about?
The big headlines were ebooks, self-service for customers.
Okay.
And I think then the traditional library service. So, for example, with eBooks, Baker & Taylor, which is a library publisher and book distributor, I guess,
huge
Baker
one.
& Taylor, right?
Yep.
They're partnering with Barnes & Noble to promote the use of the Nook for library loaned eBooks. And there's actually a digital media circulation and management platform that was announced called Access 360.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a huge announcement. Another one, Local 3M, is launching an ebook lending service. And so we were all excited to hear about what that was going to look like. It will use the EPUB format. And again, work on the same kinds of e-readers that currently libraries are able to lend to.
Can I just interject real quick? So, is the concept the same as, for example, when you do a digital movie rental through iTunes, and you have 24 hours to read it, or in this case, view the once you've started watching the movie, you've got 24 hours to complete it, or 30 days total to do it. Otherwise, it just vanishes.
Correct. That's the same concept.
Okay.
You check out an item, you have it on your personal device, it disappears after a certain length of time. However, I don't know if you're familiar with Freegal.
No. How do you spell it?
F-R-E-E-G-A-L. And I know Freegal is already offered at Hennepin County Library and St. Paul Public Library. That is a service where members of those libraries, public library card holders, can take their card, log into the site, the Freegal site, through the library, and actually download DRM-free music and keep it. It won't disappear.
Oh my gosh.
Now there's a new model that's coming along for books that works the same way called Freeding. F-R-E-A-D-I-N-G. And for Freegle, you have the Sony Music catalog behind it. You can download, for Hennepin County users, you can download 3 songs a week. And then you can download them again one more time if you lose them or you don't put them in the correct place, or you want to download them again on a different device or computer. But you own that music, in essence, once you've downloaded it.
Wow.
So the Freeding version, which was announced at ALA, will have 20,000 copyrighted titles from 16 publishers. Now, this is the problem with all these different services. When we talk about e-reading or e-readers, publishers have to cooperate in order to make them work.
Yep.
And OverDrive has been an example of a very popular service for offering e-books. But there have been issues with publishers like HarperCollins saying that a book can only circulate a certain number of times and then the library has to repurchase.
Okay.
So the kinds of publishers that the service has on board is very important. So, for example, with Freeding, they have Sterling Publishing, Source Books, Andrews McMeel, and Rainery Publishing. With the Baker & Taylor Access 360 project, it's a different, because the combination of Nook and Access 360, it's providers that provide things that are in EPUB, but then again are willing to provide them to the library market.
Yep. And for those that don't know, the EPUB format is a standard. And so the Kindle, the Nook.
No, the Kindle does not. The Kindle doesn't use
corrected.
EPUB.
It can't do, it can't, I thought it could also do EPUB.
No, this is one of the problems. And actually that's being worked out right now with OverDrive, is trying to work out a lending system that works with Kindle. Kindle has its own proprietary format.
Okay.
Oh, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to be the problem that we have as providers.
Yeah, and the last thing you want is multiples.
Right.
Multiple file formats and all that that you got to try to keep straight.
And multiple logins for customers, because right now people have to look at their regular account to see the physical books they've checked out and their digital account to see their OverDrive content, and potentially a third for audiobooks they've downloaded.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people that are in a position where they can afford to buy hardcovers right when they come out and all of that, and they can afford to buy all this stuff. But you know, if you go through, like my son does, he goes through a book, about a book a week.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are, you know, mysteries or sci-fi novels or fantasy novels or things like that. So he does it really for pleasure. And he does have a huge library of stuff on, we have to keep buying him bookshelves, but I look at that and look at what he has invested in just the manga animation books. And we added it up the other day. He's got over $1,400 worth of manga.
Wow.
And so I think about all the people out there that there's not a snowball's chance in Hades that they could afford, you know, $25 a week for one book, or give their kids an allowance for manga, you know, and yada, 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 that lending libraries in the digital age just have to be there. I mean, it's just otherwise now we're starting to really severely restrict access to knowledge.
Right.
But I can't even imagine what you guys have to wrestle with respect to not only the technology, but the huge resistance on the part of the publishers. Resistance, which I understand, believe me.
Oh, and we do too. You know, there's a point at which they need to monetize the service they're offering and pay authors. And, you know, with the format and the content being in one place, it was much easier. Speaking of which, another interesting thing that I saw, Playaway, P-L-A-Y, Away, A-W-A-Y, is a company that offers a sort of a self contained audiobook that you can then buy like at the airport or check out from the library. We don't offer them at Hennepin County, but I know some do. And basically you just plug in headphones and you can click play and it bookmarks. It has one specific audio title on it. But at the conference, they're also showing that they're offering sort of a mini screen called Playaway View.
Mm.
And it's a digital media player that is preloaded, that could have video content.
So you could lend out the whole device.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The audio ones are great also if you have someone who doesn't really have the interest or the capability to learn how an MP3 player works in terms of plugging it in and downloading something. It's already this self-contained unit.
Well, so maybe you and I talked about this at one point, that I'd been to the Eden Prairie Library and was really blown away by the speed of the Wi-Fi, but also realizing I'd gone there to access Atoms, you know, some physical books.
Yeah.
Because the reference stuff that was only available at the library. And as I got the books and I went and I was taking notes on my laptop, and I looked up and I realized every single computer had at least one person. And in one case, there were three young boys hovering around this computer, and they were looking at girls' profiles on Facebook, which I thought was hilarious. And then there was this one young Somali brother and sister. I could tell that they were brother and sister by the way that they were basically pushing each other around. But they were in their teens, and they were on, and they must have walked up there. There's a big Somali community not too far away from the library in Eden Prairie. And I thought, what a phenomenal service. But everybody was in there doing stuff digitally. Hardly anyone was walking through the stacks. And so when I come back to the, you know, thinking about the shift of what's going on with the shift from physical to digital, this is, you know, this concept of the playaway where you actually go rent the device, I'm sure you could obviously pre-populate it right there at the library because you've got internet.
Right.
And
it doesn't work that way yet, but that's the way the National Library Service for the Blind would work. No, Playaway right now is already a fixed content that you purchase.
Okay.
So you, when you buy a thriller, it's already on there and it's got the book cover like as part of the wrapper on the Playaway. It is self-contained. But the National Library Service for the Blind has a brilliant format that's based on a USB drive that they've made almost the size of an old cassette because that was the way the old ones worked.
I'm looking
with Braille
at it here.
On them. It's amazing. Wow. And you plug it into the player and it's got big buttons that are easy to use and it speeds things up and slows things down. But then they can create those on demand. So they no longer have to have the warehouses of content for the National Library Service. It used to be that when you sent your audio books in or your talking books to the library service, they had to have a backup of every single cassette.
Right.
So that they could replace cassettes if they were broken. They could make new ones. Or if they'd worn out. Well, now it's all on a flash drive. So if you can imagine, it's just a large computer and a database of content that they can pull from, put it onto the actual physical media, and then send it to you. Now, I will tell you this, though, at the Eden Prairie Library, for example, at many libraries in the metro, there is still a great deal of circulation of the print material.
Yeah.
A lot of the circulation takes place, though, through placing a hold from home, receiving an email, and going in and picking up and then dropping off the material. And all of our libraries have outdoor book drops for 24-hour
exactly. Drop-off. Yep.
You know, we see a tremendous amount of circulation that way.
Wow. Well, so this may sound like a out of left field question, but I don't know. I think that it's right in your sweet spot of library science. But I met with a startup today, and one of the things they're working on is a curation model. And we got into this whole discussion about, you know, not only the acceleration in creation of content, but trying to identify true thought leaders that you could then curate and present. So if you're interested in, reading for the blind, if that was mm-hmm. your content, then you'd want to get granular on the taxonomy, you know, maybe devices for reading for the blind, and maybe, braille-based tablets, or, you know, I don't know what the various subcategories would be, but there's so much information out there now that it's getting to the point where even for those of us that take great pride in our capability to search on Google and find damn near anything in any file type, it's becoming really challenging for me and incredibly time consuming to try to do the research, because there's just so much volume of just raw data. And how are you guys wrestling with that? And how are you helping people that come into the library that are looking for specific things, or doing research on specific categories? Because it feels like it's out of control.
It goes back to librarians being great community managers, and that we are absolutely curators of local content and subject matter that is specific to our audience. I think any good community manager is a local curator of information on their area.
Okay.
We certainly continue to offer selected websites side by side with databases and searches for the catalog on our website, because we have aggregated that kind of information. But it's very hard to keep current. It's very difficult to make sure a site is still viable and owned by the person who owned it when you chose it or selected it.
Yep.
How frequently do you update that information becomes a concern.
Well, do you have tools at your disposal? For example, I know that there are a lot of media sites that do automatic parsing of links. And so they can, if you're getting 404 errors, for example, they know that that's a dead link. And so they can go in and they can parse every link in their site. Do you have technology like that where you can go out and...
We do, use the content management system that we have that's
okay.
Homegrown. But I would say that it still becomes an issue of, just because there's a dead link doesn't mean that this, or just because there isn't a dead link doesn't mean that there isn't out-of-date content or inaccurate information. And that's where their strength is in databases, the items we subscribe to, because that is exactly the kind of content we get there, is the curated content or the reliable content, the published content, peer-reviewed in some cases, full text.
Okay.
An example would be, if you needed an article that was in last week's Business and Finance magazine, published out of Minneapolis, I could tell you which databases to find that in full text.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't necessarily narrow down your search, but it can help you at least get to good content.
Well, and so gosh, I could take this in so many directions. I had a client, the CEO of this company, he and I had a couple of opportunities to really just, chew the fat and just talk. And I asked him, I said, so tell me what what keeps you up at night? What's the one thing that you mull over and over and over again? He looked at me and smiled and said, the disruption that I won't even see. And he said, I can't stay on top of all this stuff, and I go to these conferences, but that's my biggest concern, is that somebody will invent something or create something and it'll take off, and there will be a viral internet meme that travels all over, and I will have no clue that it's going on. And he said, that's what keeps me up at night. And so I began to think about that more and more and more. And I realized that even I, Mr. 1,000 Google reader feeds and trying to stay on top of stuff over and over. I can't even stay on top. I'm going to Germany in August. And, you know, the data connections on these devices, you know, you can spend thousands.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, well, here's what I really want. I want a map that I can download to my phone and I can use the GPS on the phone. So I found a couple and I was poking around and yada, yada. And then today, a guy I follow on Twitter had a link to a New York Times article about an app called Off Maps 2 or Off Maps Squared. And you can buy, it's like $6 plus 99 cents for the app. And you can have unlimited maps. And you can also download all the Wikipedia articles that are associated with that city. So the cities I'll be in Germany, and I'll be also be in a city in Poland. I downloaded the maps. It's based on an open map, selection of maps, and downloaded all the Wikipedia articles that are associated with that. And I thought, oh my gosh, what I would love is to have an off maps for whatever topic I could possibly dream of. And that's what I keep thinking about when I walk into the library, is that what I always hope for is that, if I'm thinking about one thing in particular and I'm doing research on one thing in particular, that the stuff that's, you know, our satellites around that topic will somehow be able to be presented to me in some way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's too much to ask of a library or of library science, but I can't think of anyone else who can make sense of an incredible body of information and data, because, you know, information and data is not knowledge. It's what you do with it and how you parse it that creates knowledge. How are you guys wrestling with some of those big questions?
That's a really good question. I don't think I have a good answer.
Okay.
I think that the idea of like off maps or offline information used to be our bread and butter. But yeah. Now we are so reliant on online tools. So I don't know that I have a good answer. Maybe that is the next frontier. It'll be interesting to see how connected our society wants to be or how disconnected.
Right.
So right now our customers want current data that they can access from anywhere. When we talk about the turnaway factor, students in universities have libraries now in their dorms, you know, like actually as a level of the dorm, there is a library there because it's been identified that that's a need that students have in some cases, and still won't go down 6 floors to go to the library. They want to see the information on their computer. They expect to have that instantly. One of our most popular services in the public library space is chat librarianship. I answered questions from all over the country yesterday.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And I staff that regularly.
And so you can sit there, but you're probably in front of a workstation so you can look stuff up instantly.
Exactly.
For people, right? Send them a link.
And, you know, we're looking into text messaging as a service design option. That's something that many libraries do around the country. So we're trying to meet people's connected needs. Whether or not we're still thinking about their disconnected needs, I'm not sure.
Well, you can't do everything, right?
No, I guess not. But I will tell you that on our recent honeymoon, my husband and I got an app for the iPhone that let us manage our data and the amount of data we were using right from the app. So that worked pretty well.
Oh, really? So you could buy the international package? And
it let you manage it through an app.
Interesting. Well, I bought Boingo Wireless, and it'll pop up and tell me if a Wi-Fi hotspot will work.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting.
Well, good.
So, what other sessions did you go to down there? Did you do any of the social stuff or the mobile? Because I'm looking at the
there was a mobile
exhibit.
Pavilion in the exhibits, and they. Different vendors have different mobile solutions. And I think this is probably the same problem that we face in the regular private sector, that there are always 5 different solutions for what you want to use. And they aren't always in the same neat little package. For example, we use one provider for calendar for meeting rooms in the library.
and that product doesn't necessarily work seamlessly with our mobile app, or well, their mobile app doesn't work with our mobile app, or OverDrive has its own mobile app, even though we have a mobile app that gets to our catalog that lets you see our holdings.
Okay.
So things are sort of being developed in vacuums when it comes to that area. You know, different databases that we subscribe to offer mobile apps, but they're not always mobile optimized content when you get to the results. So there are concerns with that. I didn't see anything that really struck me as exciting right now in mobile, but that's but I'm already pretty enamored with the mobile app solution that we implemented in Hennepin County, which is called Boopsy.
Okay. Which I've used.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And then I mentioned self-service being another trend.
Yep.
And the two big things there were book vendors, book vending machines. So you put books on hold, you can pick them up 24/7 out of a book vending machine.
Wow.
And there are two players in that market. One of them is out of China and has not sold to the U.S. market yet. So that will be interesting to see. And then the other self-service feature that was really interesting was a laptop dispensing machine. So that if you came into the library and you weren't going to bring your own laptop and you wanted to use a public workstation, but what you really wanted was a laptop to take into a meeting room, or you didn't want to have all your computers anchored down, you could check out a laptop.
Oh,
and you basically just slid your card and out came this Dell notebook. They had netbooks as well in a distributor and a dispenser. And they had actually originally developed the system for airports, for sort of the Sky Club members to use.
Well, you know what would be, really cool? If you could do that and a librarian would come out. That would be that would be awesome. Then you could ask all the questions you wanted.
There you go.
Well, you know, one of the things I was curious about, because I keep thinking about this over and over and over again, is, you know, and we're all exposed to it in K-12. You know, you go into the media center, the resource center, whatever it's called, in your various high schools, and, you know, here's how you use the Dewey Decimal System. I shouldn't say high school, younger, but here's how you use the Dewey Decimal System. Here's how it started, you know, yada, yada. Now it's here's how you search online and so forth. And so one of the things I've been thinking about is are the kinds of classes that could really empower people to do things differently. And I don't see, I'm looking at the Hennepin County Library site now about events and classes and so forth. And it seems to be more event driven than it is class driven. And does there seem to be more interest in classes? You know, is there starting to be any kind of a pull for that about you know, more efficient Google searches, about how to aggregate information? I mean, one of the hot buttons for one of my friends that runs a nonprofit, it's called Tell a Vision, .tv, George Johnson. And one of the things that he does, it's all about how kids can tell their vision story for the future. But one of the things that they learn in the process of telling that story is how to use video, how to storyboard, and how to essentially tell it in a very succinct way, because he limits everybody to 3 minutes. That's all you get. And like Twitter, you have to learn how to be very good at communicating if you're using Twitter, because you got 140 characters. This is the same sort of thing. And I think about all the skills that we all need now to be able to pull together disparate information from a lot of different sources and package it up and deliver it on a blog or, you know, to our inside our company to deliver a presentation. And does there seem to be any more pull for stuff like that?
You know, I just don't think we've positioned ourselves that way in public libraries yet.
Okay.
I think that, it doesn't mean there isn't demand, and certainly our LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook class gets a lot of traction. It's also, there's been a shift from classroom learning where everyone sits at a computer and does the same thing the instructor does, to a more interactive approach, a more just-in-time style.
Okay.
And I don't think we've really mastered that yet. It's a good frontier to kind of perhaps approach next.
Okay. So before we end here, I got to know about your honeymoon. I don't even know where you guys went, but before before we get to that, is what really excites you right now about what you're doing in the space that you're in?
I'm really excited about co-working and the implications of what I can learn for public libraries and what co-working can learn about having a librarian in their space. I plan on writing a special report for ALA Editions about co-working, and I'm also blogging about my co-working experience. And I'm just really excited about the possibilities and the energy in this space. I'd love to see some of this energy in public libraries as well.
Yep. Well, who knows? Maybe you'll end up walking out of there with more ideas than the value you're giving. Because, I mean, just talking to you on the occasions we've had to do so is, it's just fun to explore the what ifs, because it's all changing. I mean, the connected world now is shifting everything from human communication to your role in library services and our access to everything, knowledge, and it's a pretty amazing time.
It is. It's exciting.
So, where'd you guys go?
We went to Spain.
Oh, whereabouts?
We went to Madrid, Barcelona, and Bilbao.
Nice.
And Bilbao, we flew for a day to see the Frank Gehry Guggenheim.
And
it was phenomenal.
Really?
Phenomenal. The art in Madrid was unbelievable. And you can always see my photos on flickr.com/MegCanada.
Well, hey, I went there today and I didn't see.
Well, I'll make sure that you get that set. There certainly is also a set of New Orleans photos, so you can see those as well.
Got it. Oh, now I'm looking at it. I'll put links in the show notes.
Great.
Good.
Great, and I'll send you some links to Playaway, Freegal, and the other things I mentioned.
Okay, that'd be great. Well, good. Well, it sounds like it was a good conference. It was. I'll also put links in the show notes to 3M's ebook lending service, and then Overdrive as well, of course. But 3M is our interest because of St. Paul.
Local, absolutely.
Local angle. That's right. So that'll be pretty amazing. Well, I'm still, you know, at the end of the day, to be sitting around with the access, you know, on an iPad or even with a laptop or any computer workstation is just amazing. But I also see my sister and brother-in-law have droids. Mm-hmm. And these are people that, you know, they're not really in a position to afford broadband, you know, the $50 a month or was 60, whatever it would cost.
Sure.
And, but they need email and they need phone and they need, you know, they need access to stuff. And it's just fun to watch them when they get more and more access and the kinds of things they're able to do with it. And they, like many other people, are using these devices in lieu of a broadband connection or a computer at home or any of that stuff. So I think it's pretty intriguing that you're moving in the direction of mobile too, that seems to be a hot button.
It is. So, absolutely.
All right. Meg, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Steve.
You carving out the time. And we will talk to everybody on the next Minivate Gang podcast. Have a great 4th of July.
You too.
Take care.
Blue sky, that's all I want to see. Today, yeah. Blue sky, that's all I wanna see today. Because I'm so tired of all these clouds hanging around my head this way. George, oh George, I would never, never do you wrong. That's what she said. She said, George, oh George, I would never, never do you wrong. Well, the next thing I know, she caught a 210 train and gone home. Yeah. Well, I gave all my money because I thought that would keep her around. I gave her all my money, man, because I thought that would keep her around. Well, the next thing I know, my little girl was Chicago bound. Kicking in your stall.